Radio City Talk. Match of my life.
Today's Match of My Life guest is Paul Waring, professional golfer on the European Tour. Right, we are going back a few years, just at the start of you getting into golf. You competed on the European Tour since 2008 after qualifying at the first attempt in qualifying school in 2007. Obviously a massive, massive moment for you when you actually make that breakthrough initially. Do you remember that as being a significant step for you?
Oh, yeah, of course. Luckily, before that point, I'd actually played the Open at Carnoustie as an amateur, and then turned pro after that and had a couple of starts, had a couple of invites on a challenge tour, which is obviously the tour below what I'm playing currently. So I kind of got my feet sort of quite quickly into pro golf. I did well in those few events I played actually on challenge tour, and actually guaranteed a card, playing rights actually on that tour before even going to Q School. So obviously went to Q School without the pressure that's normally associated. You know, it wasn't an all or nothing situation for me. So I actually, I kind of played myself through all three stages quite nicely, came to the final day. And I remember, they're quite cruel, really. They put up sort of where 25th card is and, what score you've got to be. And, you're trying not to look, but it's always in the corner of your eye. So you kind of know, right, I've got three holes to go, can't drop, I've got two shots, I'm two shots clear or whatever. And you're trying your best not to get too far ahead of yourself. You're battling with yourself constantly. And I think I made par down 17, it's par three, San Roque. And I knew I had, I could have made double down the last and got a card. So again, I actually walked down the last without the kind of pressure associated with it. Obviously, you're always trying to get the best card you can. But I kind of knew in the back of my mind that I was okay. But yeah, I remember having a beer with a couple of friends after that week and just letting it sink in a little bit and, what I'd actually done. Obviously first time out, I was, you're not always expected to go and do that. It's a tough, tough grind, Q School. But, you learn a lot about yourself during that week as well. And I think that sort of put me in good stead, for regaining the card for the last 10 years.
Maybe it should have been expected. You're from a family of sporting excellence, aren't you?
Well, we're all right.
What was your mum? She was an England swimmer.
Yeah, so she could swim. She's like
she could swim.
She can swim. Tell you what, when you're younger and you're in, obviously you go on family holidays and all that sort of stuff. She's like an absolute fish, dolphin. You can't believe how quick she is. Even now, she's in her mid 50s or whatever she is. She's just still absolutely rapid anytime she gets in the pool.
Never lose it. And your cousin, he's a pro tennis player?
Yeah, he's coaching more now, to be fair to him. Mm. He was a great player. Again, struggled a bit like me, really. Struggled with a few injuries and stuff along his path. Didn't quite recover. But yeah, great, great player. He's played against some of the top guys as well and had some success. And just a shame his injury's got in his way, really.
Right, so 2007 was a momentous point, but 2008 really is the point where you do your Match of My Life, if you like. So you must have been in incredible form, a lot of positivity, confidence in yourself, and you head to qualifiers for the Open Championship.
Yeah, so I went the more traditional way, rather than, because obviously when you're inside the World Top 500, there's a separate qualifying for the Open. Well, it used to be back then. It's sort of changed again now, where we have obviously the top three non-exempt players in those few events running up to it, French, Irish and Scottish. So I went the more traditional way. I was exempt through first stage of qualifying. So I was straight into final stage, which is two rounds. It was up at Monifif. Oh, no, it wasn't. Hang on, where am I? I'm talking about Carnoustie here. I've got the wrong year. No, actually, it was the more traditional way of two rounds round Sunningdale. So, yeah, sorry, top 500 in the world. It was 20 places for the Open. I was playing with Jose Maria Olazabal there as well. That was a bit of a grind, a bit of a battle to get through that. Again, it was right in between tournaments. It's right in between the French Open and Wentworth. So, again, you're going to go and play 36 on a Monday between two of your biggest tournaments of the year. So scheduling's a bit of a nightmare and you're trying to reserve a bit of energy. And I remember actually getting in. I think I hold a real long putt on the last as well. I think I hold a nice long sort of 30, 40 footer for eagle down the last as well to get in, which was obviously massively, massively sort of elating. And then obviously you can sort of plan your time then ready for the week ahead of you.
And the lure of playing at Royal Birkdale at that stage, that early stage of your career, must have been massive. You must have been literally over the moon at this idea of qualifying for the Open Championship.
Well, yeah, I obviously went to watch the Open when I was a bit younger at Hoylake as well, back in, was it 06?
06,
yeah. So I went to watch that one. Obviously then played 07, 08. Yeah, Tigers year, yeah. And then obviously played 07, 08 and kind of like, well, you know, this is great, love this. Mm. And then to obviously play, you know, to kind of see what a local Open would be like at Hoylake, then obviously get to Birkdale and be like, wow, this is just unbelievable. Again, it was quite, you know, I had a little bits and bobs to do that, but I was that week, but I was a young lad. I kind of slipped under the radar a little bit.
Relative unknown, weren't you?
Yeah, I didn't have much, you know, much to worry about at that point. It was all, you know, bright, wide open eyes and, you know, wow, this is amazing. And, you know, it was very different to some of the tournaments I played prior. I'd only played sort of 6 months as a tour player prior to that. So I was still learning a little bit. And then I got there and, you know, we had a few good breaks with the weather and, you know, we got a few good tee times where the wind got up later in the afternoon. And the kind of week just developed in front of me, you know, made cut quite comfortably.
Do you remember who was in your group on day one?
I think it was Stadler.
Craig Stadler.
Craig Stadler.
The Walrus.
Yeah, the Walrus. And now you're asking the question here, who else was that? I can't remember who else the other guy was, but
you'd never forget Craig Stadler, yeah, though, would you?
No, to be fair to him, he's a great lad as well. He was, you know, really accommodating, really, you know, chatty all the way around. So yeah, again, felt comfortable doing what I was doing there. I can't remember who I played with on the Saturday, but played okay on the Saturday, and then obviously, absolute dream draw happened on the Sunday.
Yeah. So how did the draw happened for the Sunday? How did the end of Saturday materialise that all of a sudden you ended in this dream group with Phil Mickelson?
Yeah, I can't remember quite how it all panned out, but I remember looking down the list and obviously just seeing where I was score-wise and who was in and around me and how far behind we were and what we needed to go and do. And I just remember just seeing Phil Mickelson next to me on the leaderboard. And obviously, the way it normally works is the first player is in on the score or last out the following day. So the tee times are kind of reversed based on scoring. And I remember sort of looking at it. And I didn't actually go on the website to see who I was drawn with. I just had my tee time come through, so I knew what time I was up in the morning. And then phone starts pinging away, and I was like, you know, just bit weird. Obviously, I've had loads of texts during the week saying, you know, yeah, well done, you know, have a good week, enjoy it, blah, blah, blah. And the next week, it's like, enjoy your game tomorrow. Enjoy your game tomorrow. It's telling me he's hitting it the wrong way and all this sort of stuff. I'm like, what do you mean? Well, you're playing with the lefty, aren't you? It's like, what? It's like, oh, yeah, you're drawing with Mickelson. I was like, oh, okay, that's going to be a big day then. All of a sudden, you know, Tiger wasn't playing that year and playing with the world number two. In a local Open on a Sunday, and not
just the world number two. I mean, literally the history and the sort of the pedigree that Phil Mickelson brings with him. There's a different aura about all
yeah,
that.
Yeah, it's someone that's going to bring crowds. It's someone that, you know, it's going to excite people to go and watch him. And I knew that. And then obviously there was that thing of, oh, he's playing with a local lad as well. And all of a sudden, you get on the tee on Sunday, and there's just thousands of people now. This is getting a bit silly. You know, the 5-6 deep down both sides of the fairway. Again, walking out onto the first tee. You know, he had a pretty big roar when it was announced. Mine was bigger. It was ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous.
Did he comment on that?
To be fair to it, he was absolutely brilliant as well. He was great. I didn't, again, sometimes with these guys, never met him before, you think, you know, sometimes, are they going to just discard you or whatever, you know, as a young lad at the time. But he was talking all the way around. His cat, you know, Bones was on his bag at the time. Again, just, you couldn't shut these two up. They just wanted to talk and talk and talk and talk and talk and talk and talk all the way around. And again, he gave me some insights into what he did well in his career and stuff as well as we were going around. You know, obviously, I think he saw, you know, a young lad next to him and just wanted to impart a little bit of wisdom, which was, you know, great. And then obviously walking down the 18th on Sunday with, you know, the biggest draw of the week. Obviously, I know Padre went on to win, but walking down the Lastwood World number two at the time, you know, with the volume of crowds there, both of us, again, I think we shot the same score and both finished top 20 that week. And, you know, it's just one of those things that all kinds of just all comes together, and it was just you know, almost a surreal experience.
How vivid is that walk down the 18th?
Again, obviously, because I did it this year, I think it still stands out so much that it was so, you know, it was so similar almost. Obviously, completely different circumstances, but the way the grandstands are set up are very similar. There's a few subtle changes, but yeah, you can remember the feelings of walking down there and what I was like, you know, 10 years ago now, as to what it is now. But like on that note, I couldn't actually believe this year the size of the Open. I didn't realise how much it had grown in that time. You know, there's more sort of very clever camera work done. There was sort of wires going across the golf course and drones everywhere. And like the amount, like size of the stands, they put a massive stand behind the back of 14, the par 3, and created this, you know, it was almost a gladiatorial sort of feel to it. It was like a bit of a half moon around the back of it. And, you know, all the eyes were down on you and stuff. It was a different atmosphere. It was a more intense atmosphere. It was bigger than anything I'd sort of experienced and was expecting as well. It kind of showed how much, like everyone talks about, you know, participation in sport being down and stuff, but it's hard to believe when you see that level of growth over such a, you know, relatively short period of time.
Golf looks bigger than ever, doesn't it? The golf shop at the Open Championship, they joke, don't they, in times they they say it's the only thing you can see from space. The golf shop, it's that big. Those moments with Phil Mickelson, when you're that close to sporting greatness, which he is, do you see something about the aura of the man, something that's just different about these elite sporting characters?
Yeah, the real high-end elite guys, nothing phases them. It's weird. They give out the same emotion whether it's good or bad. And a lot of the guys, don't get me wrong, some of the guys wear the heart on the sleeves, don't get me wrong, but vast majority are very, very sort of placid, and you wouldn't know if they were doing well or bad. They're just the same day to day. And I think that's what leads back to their consistency a lot of the time. I think they just go about their days, you know, day to day, week to week, in exactly the same manner.
Machines.
Yeah, borderline, yeah. Mm. But again, once you scratch under the surface a little bit, there's some real good characters out there as well. It's just for, you know, that sort of trained, sort of innate ability that they've got to just shut down and just get the job done. That's the thing that really impresses me, all, you know, time after time.
What have you got, a piece of sporting memorabilia, something from that 2008?
Well, obviously, I've got my players' badge and stuff.
Yeah,
I've collected all my players' badges from last 10 years on tour. A few Opens. Played Nedbank this year as well. So, I've kept all them, and I wouldn't mind actually, you know, put them in a nice little mounted whatever somewhere in my house, or donated to the golf club or something like that.
Amazing stuff. Paul Waring, thank you very much indeed. What's the expectation or hope for 2018?
Obviously, to build on this season. You know, I would love to, you know, get inside World's Top 100, World's Top 50, Top 30 order of merit, that sort of thing. Again, I still haven't won. I've come close a couple of times. You know, that's got to be, you know, you can't always set that as a goal because you can't always sort of dictate what someone else is going to go and do. But they're the things that are in the back of my mind. They're the things I'm working towards. I'm always trying to look forward and trying to improve, even though I'm, you know, getting a bit older now.
You're not that old. Good luck on the European tour next year. Paul Waring, thank you very much indeed.
Radio City Talk. Match of my life.